our chicken production is enormous and mostly invisible to us because they are raised in solid-walled barns. They go off to slaughterhouses early in the morning. We really don't see chicken until it arrives in our supermarkets or on our plates.
That's Maren McKenna, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Maren McKenna is an award-winning journalist and author of two critically acclaimed books. McKenna is a senior fellow of the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University and a journalism instructor at the University of Georgia. She writes for the New York Times, The Atlantic, Newsweek, National Geographic, and Nature, among others. She joins me to talk about her latest book, Big Chicken, the incredible story of how antibiotics created modern agriculture and changed the way the world eats. Maren, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Give us an overview of this book. What are readers going to find here?
So this is two stories in one. It's the story of how we came to give antibiotics routinely to most of the meat animals on the planet, and how we discovered that was a terrible idea, something that spreads drug-resistant bacteria far away from the farms where animals are raised. But it's also the story of the rise of modern chicken production. And chicken really brackets this tale because chickens were the first animals to get experimentally what came to be called growth promoter antibiotics, the antibiotics that put on weight. They also are the first, I guess you could say, sector of the protein economy in the United States that looks like it's going to exit routine antibiotic use. So chicken got us into this problem, and it's possible that chicken will get us out again as well.
Well, I want to learn more about that in just a moment, but tell us a bit about the research that you did for this book.
So I am a science writer, and I have kind of an addiction to reading old scientific papers. So if people are interested in sort of indexes and footnotes, they will be happy with this book because there's about 1,000 items in the bibliography and about 400 footnotes. But it's also a narrative. It's a narrative and history of lots of really interesting, colorful, sometimes troubling kind of characters that stud this narrative, from the first kind of rogue chemist who discovered how to use one of the earliest antibiotics in this manner, to some people who really shine out as beating against the tide and holding up a model for other ways of raising animals that are more true to animal welfare and also don't use antibiotics too.
Well, put this in perspective for us. How big is the chicken industry?
Oh my gosh, it's enormous. I think we don't realize that because chicken is kind of so much a part of our everyday lives. I mean, we in the United States, we eat more than 90 pounds of chicken per person per year, which means basically we're eating a portion of chicken every day. But we probably don't stop to put together those numbers, which is that in the U.S., we produce almost 9 billion chickens a year. And I live in Atlanta, a few miles from the town that considers itself the poultry capital of the world. If Georgia were an independent country, it would be a chicken economy up there with Brazil and China. Our chicken production is enormous and mostly invisible to us because they are raised in solid-walled barns. They go off to slaughterhouses early in the morning. We really don't see chicken until it arrives in our supermarkets or on our plates.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of how it got to this point. One thing you talk about is the Chicken of Tomorrow contest. Tell us about what that was and why it's such an important part of the story of Big Chicken.
So I just love that because it sounds so Jetsons-like, doesn't it? So if you think back to like our grandparents or great-grandparents' time, chickens were mostly things that kind of existed out the back door and were mostly there for egg production. And people mostly ate chicken after the hens were done raising eggs, which meant that they were, at worst, they were kind of old and stringy because they'd been running around a lot. And at best, they still were the confirmation of chicken that evolution had designed them to be, to run around and pick up bugs. That's not really a lot of muscled meat. You know, their main evolutionary purpose is to produce eggs. And so in the 1940s, the USDA, along with a major supermarket chain, got the idea that if they could change the shape of chicken, if they could put more muscle on chicken, they talked about having breasts that you could slice like a steak, then maybe people would eat more chicken. And so they hold this Chicken of Tomorrow contest, inviting people from all over the country, it was a completely open contest, to breed new forms of chicken out of what were, up to that point, what we would now consider heritage birds. This is really the triumph of the hybrids of chicken. And what comes out of that contest are the basis of the modern chickens and the modern chicken companies of today, birds that are much more developed in the breast, because Americans like white meat, that are quite docile, that are willing to sit still and be fed instead of running around a barnyard, that grow very fast. We slaughter chickens at an average of 42 days. So all of that change in chicken that started out being boosted by antibiotics gets moved further down the road by this essentially change in the genetics of chicken.
So with the widespread use of antibiotics, what sort of impact did that have on the industry? I'm assuming that's in part why it grew so dramatically.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So what happens when chickens are first given antibiotics back in the 1940s? It's discovered that this allows the birds to put on muscle meat faster, and that encourages all the other changes that lead to the modern, efficient, high-throughput, very large farms that we have today. And chicken teaches the rest of meat production, cattle and pigs, essentially to do the same thing. But there are downsides, and the downsides are that antibiotic-resistant bacteria occur in the animal's guts as they're given these antibiotics in their feed and water. And what no one really thinks to predict in the 50s and 60s is that those resistant bacteria are not going to stay with the animals, that they're going to move away from farms in a variety of ways through the environment, through the air, through groundwater, and with the meat that the animals become. And so that unintended consequence of developing resistant bacteria as a result of using antibiotics becomes a really significant public health threat that no one anticipated when they thought they were just doing a good thing to feed the world.
There are also issues surrounding the production of the chicken, the slaughtering of the chickens, in terms of pollution, labor issues, et cetera. Tell us about that.
So chicken turns out to be sort of a source of technological innovation. It's really interesting if you look at the history of poultry production through that lens. And one of its innovations is a way of structuring the industry so that effectively all the good stuff is owned by companies and all the bad stuff is owned by farmers. What that means is that a company will buy the grain for the feed, mill the feed, sell the feed, hatch the chickens, take chickens to farmers, collect them when they're grown, slaughter them, package them, and distribute them. It's what's called a vertically oriented corporation. The farmers own the land, go into debt to build the barns, and they're left with all the chicken manure. So they first are in a sort of disadvantaged position relative to the companies, but they also have this load of manure, which is loaded with antibiotic-resistant bacteria and also with elements that are, you know, highly, they're nutrients for plants, and are not really sure what to do with it. And so we end up not just with antibiotic-resistant bacteria being effectively an environmental pollutant, but also with nutrients washing into storm runoff and groundwater and affecting inshore waters. It's a huge problem in places like the Chesapeake Bay, where chicken farming is very concentrated, and also in places like Iowa, where turkey farming is very concentrated, that you get nutrient overloads, for instance, in inshore waters or in lakes and rivers that really disrupt that environment as well. So poultry production has much longer, I was about to say much longer tail, I probably shouldn't say that, but it has much longer, much further effects than we imagine when we see what's going on farms.
I understand also that the processing plants sometimes, just because of the labor needed there, create some labor issues as well.
It's true. Now, I don't go into this a lot in the book, but, you know, chicken production, chicken slaughtering is a very hard job. It's smelly and stinky, and it starts very early in the morning, and it's very physically taxing, and it very often leaves people with occupational injuries. And so looking for people who will do those jobs has become a real source of labor tension. And there are all kinds of questions in places where poultry production is concentrated about how that is changing the mix of people who traditionally live in farms and whether producers are dealing honestly with the immigration system. This is true not just for chicken, but it's true for slaughtering of other meat animals as well. And it's something that really deserves more scrutiny.
You mentioned earlier that the industry is undergoing some change. So tell us about what's being done to reduce the negative side effects of the industry.
So this is a really interesting development, and I did not think that I would see this when I started work on this book 4 years ago. But two things happened. First, as of this January, thanks to some rule changes by the Obama administration, the first of those two uses of antibiotics in animals, the use for growth promotion, is effectively no longer legal in the United States. And all the pharma companies that supply agriculture agreed to make this change, to change their labels, so the growth promoter antibiotics could no longer be used. While that was happening, most of the major chicken companies, though not all, decided on their own to reduce their antibiotic use and in many cases to relinquish antibiotics entirely. They discovered that they could raise birds with effectively the same economics that they had always been raising them, but without antibiotic use. And they ventured on this because of a consumer movement, because consumers were saying to them, we no longer want to spend our dollars for meat raised with routine antibiotic use. We understand it creates a public health risk. We want you to change. You know, people get to vote with their food dollars three times a day whenever they prepare a meal. And the companies, somewhat to everyone's shock, listened. So led by Purdue Farms, who were the first out of the gate in 2014, now a number of major poultry companies have turned over to either antibiotic-free raising or sharply reduced antibiotic use. And the question is, you know, just as chicken taught cattle and pigs how to misuse antibiotics, let's hope that chicken can teach cattle and pigs to reduce antibiotic use again.
Based on what you've learned, how do you see the future of the industry unfolding?
So the thing that is fascinating to me and that gives me a lot of hope is that the companies that are furthest forward in relinquishing antibiotics are discovering that when you do that, it inevitably leads you to improve animal welfare. Because if you take away the protection of antibiotics, you have to have other ways to stimulate birds' immune systems. So because they've been cut off from natural light and they've been crowded together and they're not eating their evolutionarily appropriate diet. And so companies like Purdue have started to do things like put windows in their barns so that birds can get natural light and get immune stimulation that way. They've changed their diets to include more natural supplements. They allow them to exercise within the barns. They give them things to like hop up on and flap up to. And so it's fascinating to me that as antibiotics created the form of industrial-scale livestock production that we have so many critiques of, relinquishing antibiotics, it looks like it will change farming back again in some way and make it more like the small and medium-sized pasture-based rolling green hill kind of farms that have always been sort of the model for the aspirational model for best animal welfare, but haven't had as big a foothold in the market. So we may be returning to older, better concepts of animal welfare as a result of changing our thinking about how antibiotics should be used.
Is there a takeaway in this book? Is there something you want your readers to do with the information?
Yeah, I want them to go to the market and look for an antibiotic-free label on chicken and any other meat that they can and to spend their money on that. It's not that much more expensive. In some cases, it's not more expensive at all. And I want people to understand that it's consumer pressure that really changed this industry. More than the change in regulation, more than any new science, it's because consumers said to companies, we want you to go a different way. And that gives me real hope. I want people to remember that it's every spending decision that they make reinforces this or takes away from it. And so I hope they'll help reinforce this change. It's safer for people. It's better for animals. It's a new vision of farming, and they can really help make it happen.
Maren, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Maren McKenna's latest book is Big Chicken, the incredible story of how antibiotics created modern agriculture and changed the way the world eats. More interviews on a wide variety of topics are available at kpr.ku.edu/conversations. You can also use our KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.